Welcome, everybody, to The Rad Life, the only talk radio show that takes you along with host and age explorer Rod Gontos on his continuing journey of discovery into life's challenges, opportunities, options, and all the latest and greatest things that come with getting older. The Rad Life is brought to you this week by Your Home for a Lifetime, a company dedicated to empowering you to stay safely, independently, and comfortably in your own home. And now here is your host, Rad Gontos.
Greetings, Paul.
Yes, sir.
Where's my Frontier Latin music?
I don't have it up yet here. I'll keep looking for it here.
All right,
you've got some pioneers in the studio.
I have some pioneers in the studio. No, that's not a new pizza place. Hey, that's actually a pretty good name. Can I just claim that in case anybody's listening? Pioneer.
Okay, it's the Pioneer.
The Pioneer. Although maybe we can get sued by an electrical company. Never mind. Okay, I segue. Yeah, I do. Actually, I have a Pioneer that is a friend of mine, and I just keep bringing in San Clementians in here, you know.
We're going to have to change the name of the show or something.
The San Clementians?
The San Clemente.
Speaking
hour.
Of which, I think
the
maybe
San Clemente
maybe look for the Virginian TV show.
Oh, that the Virginian. Right, I look for that.
So, gentleman's name, my buddy, Roger Merrill. And Roger, say hi, Roger, for everybody.
Gentlemen, thank you very much. I appreciate that. And it's really a great pleasure to be in the Rad Life studio right now talking to you.
Well, you know what? No good deed goes unpunished, Roger, right?
Yes.
Yes. So March 10th, a day that will live in infamy.
Really?
I stood at the overlooking the bluff of Main Beach, San Clemente, with the piercing pier jetting out into the ocean behind me. And Roger stuck a mic in my face. And, well, it was nice about it. He didn't really stick it in my face. He kind of put it close to my mouth.
He stuck it where?
It was close.
This portion of the show brought to you by Preparation H. Okay.
Oh, my God.
Yeah,
I didn't know it was this kind of a show.
It is. That's why I told you, dress loosely. he actually was the first person to reach out when I was crowdsourcing. And I'll do a little background here. We're almost 6 months, right? So we can do a little nostalgic moment.
Yeah, why not?
Right. So when you twisted my arms and said, hey, you want to be on radio? And I said, no, I really hate to speak.
Yes, you fought me so hard. We chased shooting
you. Ow, twist my arm. And so we then went ahead and tried to figure out, well, what are we going to call this thing? This 1 hour of a mess that we're going to basically
That took longer than getting you to say yes.
Here, subject right? people to this every week.
Right.
And I basically crowdsourced the name. And we went through a couple of weeks, and then I had somebody said, okay, well, after 100 entries for the crowdsourcing name, you think you can, like, pick something? And I said, well, you know, we'll let you know. Okay. So, anyway, there was a bunch of buzz that I was consciously causing.
Oh, I see. You didn't
online.
Really want to know. You just wanted to be talking about it.
Yeah. It's how everything gets done cheaper,
wow.
don't you think?
Wow.
So the power of the Internet, and we'll get back to it. This is not just a side conversation. This will tie back
this
in.
This leading to something.
This will lead to something. But the power of the Internet actually helped
us. We do have
us.
A guest today, you know.
Somebody else is coming?
Yeah, but I don't know what to say yet. So
yeah,
consequently,
okay.
go
just
ahead.
Sit back.
That's okay.
Come.
You know what, Roger? Actually, I've realized that we don't consciously do this, or that we don't set out to consciously do this. But what would really happens is the guest comes in, sits in the chair,
and never says a thing. I know. Yeah. And thank you very much for this show. This is Roger, and I've been really happy to be here.
And if you'd like to be the guest next week, call us.
It's basically verbal waterboarding that we subject people to for the first 2 minutes of the show.
Okay.
Then they're dazed and confused, and then we got them exactly where we want them.
Exactly.
And they're going to divulge all kinds of stuff about their lives. But, by the way, I'm kidding, so don't be scared to be on this show. So we crowdsourced the name, and we used the power of the Internet to establish the show. And, obviously, we're an Internet-based show, and we do podcasts and all this stuff. And the cool thing about it is Roger, may I ask how old you are?
Oh, wow. You just going right for it.
Ouch. You didn't prep me for that one.
Yeah.
Okay, a quick one is that I'm 30.
That was an easy one.
I'm 38 because we're on the radio.
That's right. Nobody can tell.
All right. I'm 70 years old. I just turned 70 a couple of days ago.
See, that's amazing, isn't it?
It really
yeah,
is.
And I yeah. my brain is 38, so consequently, that's where I'm at.
And by the way, we always, I mean, this is an aging show, right? And it's getting older by the minute.
Yeah. Older by the minute. That's the joke. Right.
But we are an aging show, and so we always say that, you know, especially like, you know, Paul says, you know, I'm a hippie, yuppie, now I'm an uppie, whatever, I don't know what I am. The more we talk about this period of life, especially for boomers and yeah. boomer wannabes like me, we try to define this because the language doesn't exist. So I feel like I'm in my 30s. I look at you guys and how vibrant you guys are and how pursuit and your
we're both dressed like we're in our 30s here.
Except those shorts, Paul. Really, like really, we need to get you some longer
they're
shorts.
They're a little too short, actually.
Actually, they're actually coming back. You know, so you're probably okay.
All right. Hang
in there. But we always, I mean, you guys are pursuing a passion, both of you, okay, mm-hmm. in your fields. I think, Roger, you've done it forever. And the cool thing about this is that we are internet-based. Mm-hmm. There's this sort of myth that, you know, when people are older, they're kind of technology averse and all of this stuff, right? Well, Roger, I mean, I asked his age, but I had no clue. I would never say he's 70. In my mind, he maybe looks in like in his early 60s, maybe?
I look like I'm 70. He looks like
he's 60. Well, you're just because you have to, you're subjective to me every week. You know?
That's right.
You get older every time I show up.
But you make an interesting point. When we started this station several years ago, this is meant to be a community radio station focused on business shows and community conversations. I thought it would have all be 30-something. I thought I'd be the oldest one in the room. I'm going to be 60 this year.
Right.
And in a couple months. I never anticipated that the vast majority of our 20-some shows are not 20-somethings, but they're 50, 60, 70-somethings. We have people in their 70s doing this show, and a lot of them in their 60s and a lot of them in their 50s here. So it goes to prove you can teach an old dog new trick, and it does prove that we are redefining what it means to get old.
This portion of the program has been brought to you by OC Talk Radio.
That's right.
Right here in Orange County.
A little plug there.
So with that being said, the idea that everybody who gets older, I mean, at some point we were younger, right? So I don't know that we avoided technology when we were younger. Why is it that all of a sudden that we basically are older, or that basically we, you know, drive more cautiously, whatever, all of a sudden?
Because we're adaptive. We're the first adaptive generation.
Can you hold on to that word for us, please? Because that is really the underlying.
I'm holding it.
You're holding it. That is really the underlying word that I really wanted to get out today.
Yep.
And it's really adaptive. And I think for people, and I mean, look, I'm guilty of it as well. I remember being younger and looking at people that are older and going, oh my God, I feel so bad for you. You're so out of touch with everything, right? And nothing further from the truth is reality.
Roger and I remember when you couldn't trust anybody over 30.
I'm 38, remember.
So just barely.
So you're barely trustworthy.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
which is about right, actually. Yeah. Okay.
Mick Jagger said, you know, kill me if I'm still singing, you know, any of these songs past 30 or 40.
Oh, yeah.
Did he actually?
Yeah, he did.
That's hilarious. Okay. Now, and he's singing it all the way to the bank still, right?
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
So most people think that technology is the privilege of the young. And I think it really is more the aversion to technology or new things or the adaptability of people is something that really isn't measured by age.
I'd look to throw something in there. It's
sure.
desire.
Mm-hmm.
Desire to do something, even if it's through a lot of technology.
Well, because there is a learning curve, no doubt, right, on anything new, whether you're 20 or you're 50. It still doesn't matter, 70. So with that being said, Roger, When he reached out to me, and then when I found out about his involvement with stuff back in the 80s, and he's an early adapter.
So what does he do? People are still scratching their heads.
Well,
they have no idea. What
well,
he does.
Pretty much is a Renaissance man. Okay, I'll let him fill everybody in. But
you got me to pull up the theme from the Virginian, which I'm trying to cue you up to play here. You were going to say he's a pioneer. Instead, you say a Renaissance man. Now I got to go find Renaissance.
No. The cowboys were Renaissance. They just did their painting with six shooters. Right?
Yeah, all right.
That was fast.
Right? Okay. I told you, I may be late, Paul, but I'm never slow. Okay. Right. So yes, he is a pioneer.
Well, let's see. That's how quickly I had it queued up. Let's see if we can go. Nobody will even remember this.
As soon as my homie
this is
in at the
board. Oh, there we go. You know, we tried Star Wars.
That's my song.
I should have had you play Rawhide with a whip.
Yeah, I really like that.
Does anybody remember
that? Works for you.
Yes. I remember that.
And I'm half your age. No, I mean, I'm not really half your age. I remember the Virginian.
In black and white, yeah. The Virginian?
No, not in black and white. Let's not go to that far. But, yeah, so Roger's a pioneer. And specifically, what is interesting for me is he's done so much. He's involved so much. He really is a person that personifies
a pioneer in what?
Being adaptable.
In what? What did he pioneer?
Right? Well, he
come
was
across the country. He
pioneered in being the first person who actually said, "Hey, what's this rod life thing?" Okay, pretty much nothing else basically compares, right? But he called me up and said, "Could I interview you in front of the Pier in San Clemente about your upcoming show?" And he found out about it from the internet.
I see.
And where this is a man who's in his 70s, okay, has been involved in the internet as a pioneer early adapter since when, Roger?
Actually, since the internet started. My first internet...
You thought Al Gore invented it.
Yeah. No,
it was Roger Merrill.
My first website was merrillpaint.com, and I was working on dial-up, and if anybody... Yeah. It used to go...
Exactly. Right.
All this kind of weird stuff,
and then took, crash.
And it would take 20 minutes.
Yeah, exactly.
It would take 20 minutes to get on the website, and then in order to do something, and oftentimes it would crash, and you had to start all over again. That's when I started
with dial-up.
And with dial-up.
And was it 1400 or was it 3300 or what was the speed
of the
dial-up?
What
was the baud rate?
The baud rate, I think, was only 32 or 33. Yeah. It was very low. Yeah. It was horrible.
Now, at creating a website, you said you also did stuff with video and other sorts of things during this period of time.
Well,
actually,
by the way, baud rate is not how you rate people in nightclubs. Yeah. For those who are young, they were listening.
The baud rate.
The fact is that simultaneously, I went up to Hollywood, to Sammy's. A lot of people might know where all the big studios buy their equipment. Yeah. Sammy's. I stumbled in on the one in Hollywood up on Bundy.
We'll give them a plug right down the street from us here in Bristol. There's another Sammy's.
Yeah,
here.
I buy there too. And
Sammy's camera shop.
I went in and bought a video camera. I do not want to tell you how much I paid for it.
A lot.
But business was good. I bought a recorder that used 3/4-inch tape, and it was a portable recorder, and it was what the news crews used at that.
Yeah.
There's,
oh,
that
there's
sound.
The baud rate. Yeah.
That's that
wow.
sound.
Ooh.
I remember
it gives
it was
me chills.
It was
the sound of pain. Yeah,
it was so annoying. It was crazy. So anyway, I bought that, and I started doing videos portably. I had big batteries. I don't even want to tell you how much a battery cost in those days. It was just horrible.
Massive. I did in that same period of time when I was an entertainment press agent up in Hollywood. Johnny Mathis, Anthony Quinn, others, we did for fun. And
right.
We thought it would be an offshoot of our business, and it really turned out to be more for silly fun. We went over to the cable access station up in the Hollywood Hills, and with a lot of really crazy, cool people. And we made an interview show. And they, of course, gave us the tapes in 3/4-inch. And then we said, what the heck do we do with this now? You know, I can't play it on my half-inch home recording system.
Yeah, well, that's interesting is that in order – I did my own editing at that time. And I would bought Final Cut, the very first Final Cut. I had to buy a Mac to put it on.
Did they call it First Cut then? Or?
No, it was Final Cut.
Now it's Final Cut.
It was Final Cut. And it came – in about 40 or 50 small floppy disk, 50 or 60.
Floppy disk.
Yeah, another one, yeah.
And,
coasters.
And it took hours and hours and hours to load it. And once I started working with Final Cut, I wanted to cry every day because I would do a little bit and it didn't do what I wanted it to do.
Yeah, there was nothing final about Final Cut, right?
Exactly, yeah. Other than your nerves.
Other than your nerves, yeah.
Yeah. And so anyway, I would take this 3/4 tape. By the way, that was in a certain format. I had to turn it into digital, and that took a Sony machine, and I don't want to tell you how much that cost.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. And that turned it into something that a computer could handle.
But what did you do with all this product? So you took all this effort to create a website and video for what end?
Okay. In those days, people used to come. I had a store, and I used to be a teacher of how to do things. People would come in, flock in to do certain things, and I would spend hours in front of people. Then I thought, well, gosh, they took copious notes, everything else. Then they would go home, and 30 minutes later, they would give me a phone call. I know I took notes. I just missed this point,
right.
And I would spend another hour. Eventually, I said, I've actually got to do this on my own, sell them a video. on a great big VHS, and it used to be, I used to have to do two formats, VHS and beta. Thank you. Right. I had to go to a printing company that actually had thousands of them on the board. I took them a master. I mastered it with a VHS, and they put it in there. They mastered it. I sold hundreds and hundreds of those tapes for $59.95.
And they were on what? How did
they were on VHS.
And what was the course?
How to do Venetian plaster, how to paint things.
Different kinds of faux finish, I think, right?
Yeah, faux finishes, you name it. I was introducing people to products that they'd never seen. And
so you took this early medium and used it to promote your business knowledge, your skills,
exactly.
And sell tapes and sell courses. And
exactly. Adapting the technology to purpose of business promotion.
Right.
Right.
And I sold them all over the country for $59.95 plus shipping and handling.
Well, actually, you told me a very funny story when we were having lunch before the show, that not only were you selling them inside the country, but then you got a couple of calls from different people.
I had somebody come back from Europe, and they said, "My gosh, you're in Europe on TV." And I said, "You're kidding." And they said, you speak French?" I said, "No, I don't speak French." They said, "Well, you're teaching people on TV to selling this tape," which they had pirated from me.
Sure.
and dubbed. And then sometime later, maybe a year later, somebody says, "Hey, I was in Japan. You're on TV.
You speak Japanese."
Yeah. And you speak Japanese. No, they'd done the same thing there. So in Japan and Europe, France.
Roger, you know, I mean, I want to just give a reference to people just from an interior design perspective. Okay, you're talking 80s, right?
Right.
Okay. If there was anything that was like hotter than hot in the 80s, it was faux finishing.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay? Oh, yeah.
And everybody who basically could get their hand on a sponge tried to basically pass themselves up as a person who could do specialty finishes, right? And Venetian plaster, I mean, Roger will tell you, I think, is an animal all of its own, right?
Exactly.
I mean, it's, you know, to be done correctly, you know? And it's got multiple compounds involved, and to produce it right. It was a pretty sought after skill.
It wasn't
just something you did on the weekend because you happened to have a couple of hours.
You see, everybody thought they were...
A lot of people made a lot of money being Venetian plaster.
Exactly. Yeah. A lot of wives, moms, would do it when the kids went to school, and they would do it. But they were my best students because what they would do is they wanted to do it right.
Yeah.
And they would come, and I would show them how to do it. And
well, what I'm missing is, why did you, a specialist in Venetian plastering, decide that you were going to not only use this new medium but invest in equipment to shoot it and edit it? Why didn't you just go to a video production company? They were around.
Now that's interesting. I love that question. You're right. I even had the equipment, but I didn't want to shoot my own show. So what happened is I hired very expensive. I don't even want to tell you what it was. It was one camera and two audio and director. They came in. The one thing, they came in and they did a beautiful job, except for they had no clue of what I was doing. So when they went back and edited it, it was horrible, horrible, horrible. It was something I couldn't handle. So in turn, that's what really caused me to do everything else.
Let me step back just for a second, though, because why would Roger Merrill be an expert? Because you're a master of Venetian plaster, basically.
Yeah.
I mean, and it's a skill, but it's also an artistic skill. It's not, you know, it's like the gentleman that we had here a couple of weeks ago, Paul, where it was, you know, they weren't just painters. These were fine artists.
Yeah.
You know, Rick Delante was on here and Tom Swim was on here. Right. So tell people a little bit how you ended up actually, because that's an interesting story, too, and why I call you a Renaissance man, and that you adapt as you have gone through life. Because how did you even get to become a person who was involved in Venetian plaster?
Interesting. Good question.
I get one, too.
Yeah. In the 60s, I was a painting contractor, a licensed painting contractor, and I had a lot of guys working for me. The catch is, just before all that, I was asked to work with a man named Fika. He was about 6'4", weighed about 90 pounds, smoked about 5 packs of cigarettes a day, and his language was about the foulest language you could ever see, but he was a Dutch master. And I worked with him for 2 years, and I'm telling you, I could not believe the absolute marbling. I learned how to do marbleizing, how to do Venetian, real Venetian plaster.
How did you end up connecting with?
I was in the paint store, and he says, hey, in his lousy language, he said, do you want to work for me today? I need some help. And so when I went out to work with him, I could work with him. And I said, sure. I realized that we went up to Beverly Hills, worked in very expensive houses, and I realized this guy was so extremely talented, I couldn't even believe it. Mm-hmm. And he said he's going to show me, if I'd work for him for the next couple of years, off and on, he would show me things he would never in a million years, because he wanted to retire. At the end of the 2 years I worked for him, he turned all his customers over to me.
So you didn't. You didn't walk. You totally fell into it, right?
Yes.
And you just you let the road lead you where it was going to lead you.
Yeah. And I do that. I am an adapter. I adapt and overcome.
But that is a not just a survival skill. That's actually an attitude of being.
Yeah.
Right. And I tell people all the time: be careful not to rob yourself of the uniqueness of your own story.
And it's more than that. It's one of the underlying currents that runs through many of the guests on this show. I think of the people who came on here, who were doing the book and all that stuff.
Which book?
Wasn't that on this show?
We've had a couple of people with the books.
Yeah, and they were talking about being hippies, kind of. Maybe it was another show I'm thinking of here.
Yeah. You're two-timing me with other people about the
I am.
You still like Rad Show, don't you?
Number one.
Oh, yeah,
absolutely.
Of course.
When I'm doing another show, I'm only thinking of Rad. But I guess there are people out there who, in our generation, didn't have a plan like they're all taught to do today, where you at six you got to figure out what you're going to be and you got to start.
Yeah, you
got
to declare
classes
to college when you're in kindergarten. Yeah, I mean, almost
right.
These days.
And you got to have a plan forward, and you got to be thinking of how you're going to get on the varsity team and how you're going to do this and how you're going to get your college of choice. We just sort of went with the flow and reacted to things, and it sounds like, you know,
that's exactly what happened.
So, two years you're working with this guy, foul mouthed, you know, amazing artist, Dutch
five
master.
Five packs of cigarettes a day. And that's when you could smoke in people's houses. They provided great big ashtrays, and they would never say anything against him at all, because they wanted him working.
Never mind that you're working with non-water based paints at the time, right?
All solvents.
With open flame cigarettes in your mouth.
You bet.
Okay. So you do that for 2 years. The guy basically
what
says.
What was he smoking in the 60s? Cigarettes?
Or Camels. Smoking? Camels, no filter cigarettes.
Oh, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Camels.
Yeah, that's the FDA is going to knock on our door now. But so you do that for 2 years. The guy says, okay, I'm out of here. And the clients start to call you because he's giving them your number.
Yeah.
Right?
And I get calls. I go out and I give an estimate. The first time I gave an estimate, they said, oh, that's just for the material, right? And I go, I'm going to have to work this out. I had no idea what he charged, but it was way
more than
what I ever suspected it would be. Mm-hmm. I had to come up to his level otherwise they wouldn't think I was worth anything.
Right.
Then when I got the jobs, the real catch is just 2 years of experience, mm-hmm, versus the 50 years he had. Mm-hmm. I did a lot of crying. I accepted jobs that I probably shouldn't have accepted, but I got through them and everybody liked them.
So you were challenged and you reached that, and that's how you were basically an authority to do these videos.
Yes.
That were in the early days of the internet, then basically sold through a website that you basically put together.
That's correct.
Right. You then went on to own that paint store, which is a very well-known, I mean, Roger no longer owns it in San Clemente, but there's still a paint store there. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, I remember being in San Clemente, and pretty much anybody you talked to, and it came the word paint or specialty finish or whatever, there was only one reference ever made, which was Roger, you know, Merrill Paints, down on El Camino Real, just south of Pico. And how did you end up in San Clemente?
Oh, no, that's a long story.
Oh, wow.
That's too long a story. We don't have time for that.
But my point is, it wasn't a planned thing either.
No, that was not planned either. But when people came to me for information, is I took all the experience, the contracting experience and work that I did, I helped people for free. Contractors love the depth of information that I gave them.
Yeah, I'm sure.
And when people realized that I really knew what I was talking about, I became the expert in the area. Frankly, people came from New York and Chicago. They flew out here for a day to meet with me. I'd set them up at the Tropicana down there, at down across the street from
across from the pier.
Yep,
Rick Anderson's place.
Mm-hmm. They'd go down and they would spend Friday night and Saturday night there, and said, "Man," because they said, "Where do we stay if we're coming to see you?" And they would come and I'd give them the information.
Were you like the guy in the Karate Kid? You'd make them go out and buff your car one way, and then
Venetian off.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, in some of the classes that I had, they came and thought it was pretty simple to start with, but then after a couple of days of my class, I would do paid classes for that, and they would say, "Wow, this is not easy." And that's the reason. There was a difference doing it professionally.
Sure.
And one that you just kind of like play with.
So let's bring back to the video business, because we're trying to segue from that into the new world of media here. So How long did you make videos and do all that video production? And did you ever think of going into that in more depth and being your own video production for other people?
I did. The catch is that I had so much on my plate that I did a few side videos. I have done probably 20 or 30 side videos. I've done a few commercials. I'm doing one right now for somebody. I won't bring up the name right now, but I'm doing a whole series of how-to videos for them so they can get their new business on.
And it's not even paint-related, right? You're taking all that knowledge base that you have. It's a travel-based thing.
Yeah. Well, that's one, and there's another one on a product that sells to the paint market. With me, is it any more? I could help somebody do any video on any product whatsoever, because mm-hmm. I've got all this in-depth knowledge of doing everything.
What I think is funny, though, is that when people come in here and they say, "I want to videotape being on the radio here," or "I want to get a video of it," it's not video anymore. There's no video there. There's no tape. Why do we still call it video?
I know. I'm still calling it video, but it isn't. You're right. It's all digital.
Well, I think the word visual is where it's, you know, until we come up with, again, another
word. Right. Let's go videotape this. No, there's not video. There's no tape in there to video.
You know, you said to me also, you shared with me that when you were doing the videos, and then, by the way, I did notice that there were a couple of things on your website. The website that you didn't realize was still up.
I know.
MerrillPaint.com.
You went and looked at it.
I stalk people online.
I don't even own the name anymore. I just let the name go.
I thought you were going to point out pornography you'd done or something.
No, but he actually is so adaptable that actually you could see the sequence where it was video. Mm. You know, and the graphics on the video looked like something out of that. You know, if you're in Orange County and you've been around long enough, you'll probably remember a public access show called Toontime, Cartoon mm-hmm. Time.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, Cartoon Time.
You remember
time.
That?
I remember that one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Practice.
Yes,
wow,
I remember it.
Way back machine. Okay. What happened to those guys?
Right. So we need to dig those guys up, if they're still, unless they're dead, and then I don't want to dig
anybody. The other
one was the Aquabots. Dig them up.
And the Aquabots, too. They used to do a
thing. Oh, Aquabots,
and then they turned it into a live show and everything here.
Well, I don't know about the Aquabots.
Oh, yeah. Look up the Aquabots. They were crazy.
Okay. So Google Aquabots. That's the leave behind from the show today. You, while you were doing that, and I'm looking on your website, and it goes from video, and with that cover, like the little hokey kind of cover thing with the little star, you know, the yellow star, it says, "As seen on television." So I asked Roger, I said, "What do you mean as seen on television?" Right? And he goes, "Oh, yeah." And I actually stood in front of a camera in Florida at
Home Shopping Network.
Pitching your own product, though.
No, pitching somebody else's product. And that would be another show to tell you how stuff like that goes. But the fact is, the cameraman, there's three cameras on you and six studios that are all in a circle. And they're taking one down and putting one up next to you while you're shooting your show. And there's nobody behind these cameras. They're all remote cameras. And I said, I have to see the studio where they're handling all these cameras. They were a block away. They had dishes on the top of their building that were bigger than anything I've ever seen.
Sure, because they're shooting it up to a satellite to get on all these systems, cables.
Well, there's nothing in the studio where he was other than these vignettes, right? And the camera automatically adjusts as he goes around the circle. And then
Did they rotate the set? Did the set rotate?
No, the cameras rotate, right? They move, and they're like robots, and they go up and down you, and they look all over, and they're looking, because they're looking at you and setting up the cameras, and it's really funny. Actually, it cracked me up. So when they came over, they were just looking me up and down. There was three cameras. When the red light goes on, that means you're on.
Yeah.
I was just getting out of a crack up. It was hard for me to get set.
We're going to go to a break, but he said that the only thing underneath the camera, other than, you know, the thousands of people taking the calls that you can see,
right,
is that there was a screen underneath the camera that kept flickering up and down on like a little table, a graph, as you went. So as you spoke, as you spoke, you could gauge what you were saying and whether the impact was positive or negative on sales. Now, how cool is that?
Yeah, it said and it would go very quickly. I mean, it's hundreds.
Well, the first part of the show has gone very quickly.
Yeah.
So we're going to take a break, and we'll be back with Roger Merrill.
All right, thanks.
If you are like the majority of Americans, you want to continue living in a familiar environment throughout your maturing years. In fact, according to many surveys, 82% of homeowners overwhelmingly prefer to age in place, which means living in their current homes safely, independently, and comfortably, regardless of age or ability level. With over 30 years of combined experience in residential, commercial, hospitality, and destination resorts fields, Your Home for a Lifetime is a company dedicated to empowering you to maintain your quality of life and independence by helping you make your house your home for a lifetime. Do you want to reorganize or remodel your home? Do you want to add a full bathroom and possibly a bedroom on the main floor? Are you looking to make your kitchen more functional? Is an aging parent moving in, or your child is moving out, or even moving back in? Call Your Home for a Lifetime at 949-492-1872 or check them out on the web at yourhomeforalifetime.com and find out how they can help you make your house your home for a lifetime.
So, you know what, Paul, you've said it before, and I'll say it again, although we cannot expand on it, that, you know, it is interesting. The most interesting parts of the show sometimes happen off the air.
Yes.
Right? And we're talking about early adapters of technology and video and internet.
I think we should.
Would SEC won't block us?
No.
Okay.
Well,
are we subject to SEC, by the way?
No, we're on the internet. Anything goes, baby. It's like the early days. It is like that early days. Anything goes. People were running around buying video equipment and doing the most amazing things with it. They were shooting their...
Well, the most successful business model on the internet, ladies and gentlemen, is...
Porn. People... I lived up in the valley during those times when I was a press agent. I had some friends on the fringe of the business. And they would just tell me these stories and sometimes take me to these things. And they were shooting these things, just cranking them out with these little handheld VHS cameras, like he's talking about, and shooting these things on for $1,000 or $500 or something, or a couple thousand dollars, and getting $1 million back. You know, some of the famous ones, Deep Throat and everything, were shot.
Can I just say that I just had a moment of awareness? Never in my life would I think that I would be sitting in a room talking about porn with somebody in their 70s and slightly younger, Paul.
Yep.
Okay, let alone on air live.
Because it was a huge early adaption, as was the internet. In the early days of the internet, the only people making money were the porn people, too.
Well, let me tell you, the fact is the first way you could actually put something out is on a VHS or a, what's the other one?
Beta.
I would do it, and I had to put it on. It had to be on a VHS tape.
A deck,
and then I would take it to them. I had to wait in line because thousands and thousands of VHSs were being made. There was banks of 1,000, 2,000, 3,000 deals, all running, copying
duplication machines.
I had to wait in line for the porn ones. that I had to get squeezed in to get my 150 to 200.
Yeah. And you said you went to Sammy's and guys are coming in cash buying new equipment, and they're saying, well, those are pornographers.
I asked the guy, I said, boy, those guys just peeled out a lot of money there. And he says, oh, they're all these people in line here are porn.
Because everybody else is still shooting in film. You got to understand the 80s. Everything's shooting in film.
Right.
And
mm-hmm.
so people are saying, well, what are we going to do with this new videotape meeting? Well, it doesn't have depth of field. The video is real flat looking and it gets washed out real easy and it doesn't have the same cinematic quality that film did. So the cinema industry went, pooh, we're not going to do it. It's not artistic. And the other people said, we don't care artistic. We just want to show naked people.
Right.
And that was true. And so the cameras did have a kind of a flat field to it.
But still, by the way, when you look at some of the stuff from forget about the actual content.
I'm Catholic. I'm not allowed to look at any of this stuff.
No.
Yes, you are, Paul. All it means is that you're going to be going to confessional quite
afterwards.
That's all.
Here's the other thing.
As long as you're okay on your knees. Your knees okay still? Okay,
yes,
then you're fine. You're good.
It was expensive to send a VHS to somebody when they was $7 or $8 to send it out because of the size.
Yeah.
When I went to DVD, I bought the very first program to be able to put it my work on DVDs now, and then I could put a menu for the DVD, which was really, really nice.
Searchable.
Because then you could skip things.
Right to some point in the
You tape, bet. Yeah. And boy, that boosted my sales triple.
The only other things I saw being done in the 80s, I was right there with Roger. I wasn't thinking to make money off it like he did, but I saw a lot of stuff being done with porn on it. And then that's when cable access was born, and we thought that was going to become a huge deal, and it fizzled. But at the time, I was up and we were doing stuff on the cable systems that ran through the Hollywood Hills and Beverly Hills. Mm-hmm. So the people who were watching this thing at night, who were bored or stoned or drunk or lonely or whatever, it was an amazing group of people. And I remember there was a girl on the same cable system I was on. I had a silly show that we did called Roberts and Company, and the people that called us were amazing. I had some of the Beastie Boys call me up one night, say, hey, dude, we're watching this thing.
Oh,
this is really cool. Because I left my phone number at the end of it. And we had people stop me on the street as I was walking down Sunset Boulevard once. They said, hey, dude, you got this cool job. It's really great. Keep it up. And I thought, wow, I have a fan. But there was a girl named Karen. I think her name was Suskind. I can't remember their last name. And she did this stupid, to me, really silly, ridiculous restaurant review show. And she would come on and just talk about her miserable life. And then at the end, she'd say, oh, yeah, and I went to eat this food and it was pretty good. But it was her rambling on about her, you know, miserable life as she's trying to supposedly do it. And she got so famous, she got on The Tonight Show and several other things. Never got anywhere from it. But I thought, just like YouTube today, there were people being launched from that platform onto other things.
I don't know what year YouTube started, but
I don't either.
It was. Is that I did have some videos, and I thought, you know, rather than put my how-to videos on there to start with, I would go ahead and do interviews. I love interviewing people. Mm-hmm. It's just awesome. I've been doing it for years. And I went and interviewed the person in the mission in San Juan Capistrano.
Oh, sure.
And I uploaded that to YouTube as one of the very first ones, and it was so poor of that
quality,
but it got thousands and thousands of hits, and it was free, so it didn't make any difference. And I took it off a long time ago, and somebody said, you know, our classes used to watch that show
all the time.
Our kids, our, you know, grammar school kids. And I said, oh, they said, could you put it back up there? And so I went and found it. It's so grainy, it's so bad, but the fact is I put it up there and it gets lots of hits.
How funny is that, right?
So it was the first wave. It didn't last very long. Pretty soon, you know, the stuff got co-opted by other people and the cable access died out, and I guess the porn industry still flourished for a long time. But I think that it sort of hit a plateau. It didn't go away. It sort of hit a plateau, and then people forgot about it until the internet came along and then reinvigorated this whole idea of do-it-yourself, where anybody can be a TV star, anybody can be a YouTube star, anybody can be a radio star, anybody can be a anything. You have the media at your hands.
By the way, just because the question was asked, YouTube actually started February 14th, 2005. So YouTube is not more than a decade.
You know what's interesting about that statistic?
2005. No. YouTube was before that.
Founded in 2005.
Wow.
Now, here's the other interesting fact about 2005. I would have never connected the two. What else happened in 2005? iTunes added podcasts to their iTunes store and their pod players. that was their MP3 players, and and suddenly podcasting, which is a version of what we're doing here, was born at that same year. So 2005, YouTube and podcasting.
Do you know? Do you know that what was the first video that was uploaded to YouTube?
I know the first video on MTV, but I don't know the
Okay. No. Well, there was the first video, like you're talking music video.
Music video,
the
yeah.
Who Killed the
Who
radio
Killed the
star.
Radio Star. Right. Yeah, by the Buggles.
By the Buggles. The first video to be uploaded on YouTube was a video called Me at the Zoo. And it was put up by co-founder Jawad Karim of YouTube. And it was of him at the San Diego Zoo.
Oh, my gosh.
Southern California represent. There you go. See, that innovative adaptability of the California spirit, right? But, yeah, that was the very first video. It was Me at the Zoo.
And this is how it started.
Oh, my gosh.
Don't feed the monkeys.
Whatever.
Hey, you're good. You're getting better. We'll get him to do more.
Type in on YouTube.
Yeah.
Type in Roger Merrill, R-O-G-E-R-M-E-R-R-I-L-L.
This is not just a radio show, ladies and gentlemen. It's
live.
An interactive
Yes,
live
that's right.
We want you to follow along. Come on, kids.
And then,
pick up your computer.
Then San Juan Capistrano. Okay. Okay. Or no, Mission of San Juan Capistrano.
Okay, so if you're listening, go to YouTube,
find out if you can
Roger
find it.
Roger Merrill.
No, this is live. You know,
oh, okay.
Roger
happen,
Merrill, then dash, put a dash, and then put the title of
I
his
I think
thing.
You just put space.
And then what is it? San Juan Mission? San
Mission
Juan?
San Juan Capistrano.
Sometimes if you put a dash, it searches better. It'll find it, but it connects the two.
Okay. Mission San Juan Capistrano Tour by Roger Merrill.
Oh, my.
Okay. It was 3 years ago uploaded. It has 12,614 views.
Wow.
That's the second time it was uploaded.
I'm sorry. There was another one that was also 2 years ago uploaded, and that one has 4,246 views.
Yeah.
That's the porn version of it.
There are a couple of questionable padres from the teaser. Yeah.
I do nothing but clean stuff.
What are you doing on this show?
That's right.
Getting
dirty. you guys invited me here today, and I really do appreciate Orange OC Talk Radio Orange County.
That's right. Orange County's only community radio station, but go ahead.
This portion of the program has been brought to you by...
he's shameless.
Oh, yeah. Of course. Yeah. The thing is that the second time I put it up there was that these grammar school classes said, we actually show your before we go see it. Because
that's pretty amazing.
Every grammar.
So let me ask you a question then, and we struggle with this all the time, just in what we're doing here. What's the shelf life of this stuff? Will people be looking at that 50 years from now, 20 years from now, 100 years from now? Because unless you take it down, unless YouTube decides to throw stuff off, it's up there forever.
You know what? I realize that. And I do realize that the content was actually really good. And I had fun doing it. Remember, the camera, I put it up then on the YouTube, but I already had that in the can sometime sooner. Mm-hmm. And
so he's repurposing original content through a new medium.
Can you imagine if Davy Crockett or people in his age were putting up videos of doing something, making whiskey or something, and we could access them 100
okay,
years?
Okay, so that would be cool.
So guess what? Yeah. Tremendous, tremendous little setup for me. Thank you, Paul. Okay.
Wait, I've got another one.
Okay, go ahead.
Roger Merrill Wiz Rollers, W-I-Z-Z Rollers.
He's getting all kinds of exposure
here
today.
He's plugging them all here, folks.
Yeah.
So 1995.
I'm sorry, am I looking at a Wiz.com page?
No, under YouTube. Under YouTube.
Okay, Roger Merrill Wiz Roller?
Yeah,
Is this roller thing you were telling me about on Home Shopping?
No. This is something I used to do videos on Wiz Rollers, and they have a whole system.
Is this pornography?
No.
That sounds like a name of something.
W-I-Z-Z?
Yeah.
Rollers. A Roger Merrill, Rebecca R. Merrill, Life Matters by A. No, that's
no.
not you. That's not you. Roger Merrill, Wiz Rollers. I got Wiz Rollers, just one video, but none by
okay,
you. I'm sorry, Roger.
Oh,
yeah,
man.
Yeah. You're stuck with the reputation at the Mission.
Yeah,
and,
I guess you're right.
Yeah. You're going to be a missionary.
So what was the setup here? We're talking about what's the life?
The setup, you said, what is the life expectancy? And then you said, what can you imagine if we had insight into what people were doing
100 years ago?
Well, the setup is this. You remember I said Roger and I are born in San Clemente?
Mm-hmm.
I also, I don't know if people know, some people do. I know you guys know until ad nauseum that I've told you. Right? Is that I have been on the San Clemente Historical Society Board for 11 years.
Oh, my God.
There's rolling. He's rolling my eyes, his eyes
this
at me.
This might be where you want to go to get a drink.
It's like foreplay here. Wait, rolling eyes is not foreplay. Never mind. I always get those confused. I'm on the San Clemente Historical Society Board for 11 years, and I'm current president this term around. I'm actually right about halfway through my term. And one of the things the San Clemente Historical Society has, and it actually came on large reel, what did he call that tape material?
Film.
Yeah, but what's the film material? It's like the actual
acetate
film.
Yeah.
And we actually now have converted it, and we have it on DVD and stuff, and we show it on occasion. What we have, okay, is we have footage that was shot in 1926.
Wow.
By Ole Hansen himself, who is the founder of the city of San Clemente, of himself standing in a recycled army surplus tent selling lots in San Clemente in 1926 when the roads were dirt graded. Okay, Ole Hansen, just for a little bit of background, Ole Hansen used to be, prior to that, the mayor of Seattle, Washington. He also had done a development. He's been involved with real estate development all the way from Washington. If you're up in Washington State, you're at a place called Lake Forest, not Lake Forest down where we are here, but Lake Forest. And Lake Forest is, if you will, a woodsy version of what San Clemente is. It's a, you know, the live with the environment, the village beautiful concept kind of thing. And that was an Ole Hansen credited development. So it looks like, you know, even the entry to it is like you've got the, you know, the wood, you know, camp, Tippecanoe or whatever kind of lettering and stuff on there.
Right. Why would he shoot a film of himself selling
Which is exactly why I'm saying about this whole thing being so amazing. And the fact that Roger and I are working on something right now that puts him in that sort of early. Ole Hansen was a pioneer. Mm-hmm. He was selling. He was selling property to people in Hollywood, okay, and he was dragging them down in their Sunday bests.
Come on down,
to buy property in San Clemente, which was literally almost to exact point halfway mark between L.A. and San Diego.
Exactly,
and where people would go down to the races or to the bullfights across the border.
Yeah,
and basically, it wasn't like somebody actually made the mistake earlier this week when I was talking to them, and they thought that people came and homesteaded in San Clemente. San Clemente, when it started, was sold as second home, similar to what Malibu was being sold to people in Los Angeles, mm-hmm. right?
Getaway
places. And they were the small little bungalows, and everybody pretty much had everything from, you know, mistresses hidden away in those things mm-hmm. to, you know, during the Prohibition, the bootleg international boats would dump off at San Onofre Cliffs and bring it over. Oh, yeah, we were party down there. But so here comes Ole Hansen. There was nothing in that stretch of land. It was basically a rancho, right? Buys the property and has a plan to develop it, right? Mm-hmm. And has an idea visually of what it's going to look like using inspiration from the Balboa Park Expo, the Pan Pacific Exposition in 1915, which introduced Spanish Revival architectural style, the white stucco and the red tile roofs that we see, which is also very cost effective for developers to build with, and sort of reminiscent of the South in Spain and sort of the Mediterranean. So he set out to set up this thing called San Clemente, the Spanish Village.
By the sea.
By the sea, it came later.
Oh.
Right,
sorry.
Actually, yeah. Because he also, not only did he have the wherewithal to film the development of the town, people fishing at the pier, people getting taken out on a boat, people doing cartwheels on the sand in their, you know, 1920s one-piece swimming suits. He put in a public swimming pool, brought in, you know, Wiser Miller to basically swim there in preparation for the Olympics. He was a promoter. And he used the medium of movie industry, which he was familiar with, because he also then went up and did something in Hancock Park. I guess he was involved in stuff up there. He actually used that medium to promote his business.
Well, you know that the Hollywood sign was there to sell
Hollywood land, right.
Subdivision. Here's another interesting fact that you may not know, another obscure thing I happen to know. The 1920s is when really the real estate industry was born, as we know it. The idea of real estate developers selling lots of tracts of homes.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the early places was in Detroit, where Henry Ford brought all these workers up from the South, mm-hmm. black and white, to work for $5 mm-hmm. a day. And they had to figured out they want them all nearby. So they started buying up land outside mm-hmm. of his factories, and they would create these little cookie-cutter houses.
That was basically workman's housing
yeah.
that then was subdivisions, basically.
Subdivisions.
Yeah, we have one in San Clemente that was because of the rubber tire factory, you know, the rubber plant. And in a lot of these cases, also in San Clemente, you know, the furniture that went into the community clubhouse was actually done at a furniture company that developers set up. Mm-hmm. They had these little workshops that basically provided the wrought iron, and they did the tile roofs because, you know, I don't know if a lot of people know, but the terracotta tile roofs that are traditional to California, those have a shape to them mm-hmm. that actually looks like, if you look down at your thigh, going from your upper thigh to your knee, it has an angle. Well, you got short shorts, so
yeah,
you can look. Yeah. So
yeah,
if you look, it gets narrower, and that is
frankly
the shape of a traditional
short.
Terracotta tile.
Wow.
Because they had people. Not as exciting as, you know, having tobacco leaves rolled on the inside thighs of virgins in Cuba, you know, for Cuban cigars.
Yes.
But they would make terracotta
on their
clay on their legs to take that shape, and then they would set it out in the sun to dry.
Oh, now that's interesting.
Wow. I actually taught a couple of older folks something new today.
I love it.
Dang.
I didn't know that.
You see, you just never stop learning. So the thing that I find exciting is that Roger, in his own right, early on in the 80s, noticed a technology and adapted it mm-hmm. to something that he had some knowledge about to further what it was he was doing. Both, I think, as a challenge to an exciting, you know, like, hey, well, let's see where this goes, mm-hmm. but also from nuts and bolts and dollars and cents to benefit his business, just like Ole in 1926 did when it came to San Clemente.
So a couple minutes left. We're down to those last few minutes. Right. Rod just wants to keep going into the second hour here, but we're going to get, what do you do now? What do you see the adaptation for your 70? Have you stopped? Are you continuing to adapt? Are you going to create virtual reality tours next year?
Hey, that's not a bad idea. I could. That would be another show, but there is virtual reality houses now. I could tell you about the technology of it, but it's unbelievable.
And one of the major developer of virtual reality glasses and viewers is just up the street here.
Oculus.
Well, there's a camera that you can buy for $5,000, and it's so unbelievable you can't even believe it. Now, the camera takes the picture or does all the processing,
right.
But then it's actually processed at the company because the computers have to be so large, but it's unreal.
I went to the first virtual reality conference held in Orange County here at UC Irvine, and there's some amazing stuff going over there in their innovation centers, and behind the campus they have these buildings called Innovation and Design and some others, and they have all these startups in there. And based on the success of the gaming industry here, Blizzard and others, World of Warcraft and all these huge gaming companies, and then those same people adapting to the virtual reality space and the success of Oculus, the most successful, still hadn't come out yet, but wearable glass you put on that you can experience this, that was sold to Facebook for $3 billion or something. This 18-year-old kid, Palmer Luckey, boy was he lucky, built this thing and a VR found him, and they took it and sold it to Facebook. All of this is one of these emerging industries here in Orange County because of the gaming connection and because of the virtual reality connection here.
You know, I might throw in a plug here mm-hmm. is that if you go to facebook.com/San Clemente Community.
Okay.
So that's facebook.com/San Clemente Community. That's a page that I monitor and put material onto. I've done a lot of videos. I know this is a plug for me, but I've even been told that I sound like Huell Hauser in some of those.
Oh, there you go.
And the Orange County Huell Hauser of the internet. But I love interviewing people. I love asking what they do, how they do it, where they did it. Mm-hmm. That's a lot of fun. But if you go on there, you'll see that I put pictures on and different things. When I put something on there, like a picture, a photograph of San Clemente, we have 4,000 likes. I'll have 600 people look at that in the first 4 or 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And then one of my highest highest looked at uploads there.
Videos.
Is 39,000 people looking at it. So it gets a lot of hits. I don't put things on there just to arbitrarily put them on there. I try to put it and make it fun and make
meaningful.
Meaningful. Right.
Well, and and I'm just going to bring it full circle. The exciting thing for me right now, and you asked Roger, like, what do you do? Or did you stop? Well, you can obviously tell anybody who's been listening for more than a second here knows that I don't know that he's ever going to stop challenging himself. Right. But I'm actually working with Roger in the capacity of president of the Historical Society to develop a couple of programs for the Historical Society that actually put to use his talents, including his sounding like Huellhauser. Mm-hmm. Okay,
we need a new Huellhauser.
You're right. I think we've given the reverence and the respect for Hugh. Now we can, you know, but do that because I think it's amazing. And it didn't even occur to me until I start talking to him that what we would be doing is continuing to promote San Clemente today in 2015, the
just
same
like
way
Ole
that
did.
Ole did in 1926.
Yeah, and they'll be there.
And the content will be there forever.
And the next Historical Society president 100 years from now will say, thank God that you recreated all this and saved it. So they'll have a slice of life, what like is like.
Because, you know, once it's gone, it's gone.
Yeah.
Yeah, we don't have any reference to it. So, but Roger, you used to have, you mentioned that the homework show, and you ended up deciding not to continue it.
Well, I had the homework show for 5 years, and then I said that,
yeah. We're coming to the
okay.
End.
Okay. I had the homework show, but I'm going to do a new homework show one of these days. It's going to be remote in Orange County. It'll be called The Homework Show, and it'll be live video.
So here's a gentleman that's approaching his 70s that's looking to innovate one more time and adapt based on what he already knows, and he's going to be knocking on your door now. And bringing his equipment to do what he knows.
And where will we see this? On Ustream or something?
Ustream, uh-huh. Okay. And lots of venues, even YouTube, too.
So, Roger, tell everybody, because I know you're also a realtor.
Yeah.
So tell everybody how they can get hold of you.
I'm Roger Merrill, a realtor also.
Website.
My website is highervaluedhomes.com. HIGHER, valued, VALUED, homes, HOMES.com. And my phone number is on there, and you can call me if you have any idea that anything that you need to know about homes.
All right. You can reach me at Rod Life on Facebook, or you can drop me an email at rod.gantus@gmail.com, RAAD.GHANTOUS. @gmail.com, or call me on my cell 949-212-8299. Roger, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Really,
in Orange County Talk Radio.
Another example
OC.
Of what?
Another example of no limitations.
No
just
limitations.
Because
adaptability.
Just opportunities.
Absolutely.
You have been listening to the Rad Life Radio Show with your host and age explorer, Rad Gontos, brought to you on the one and only OCTalkRadio.net. Join us again next week as we continue our journey of discovery into life's challenges, opportunities, options, and all the latest and greatest things that come with getting older.